the Buddha, Mr. Dharma, Mr. Sangha. As I said yesterday, we're going to be starting on discussion of one of our master's key past lives that came up. And the teaching that came out at this time and that she so wisely and so generously put into Lotus Blossom has been a keystone teaching for, I could just say for myself, I think many other senior disciples of River Masters, ever since. And, you know, I couldn't hope to do justice to all that's in here, but I'm going to give it my best shot. There's just no place you're going to better find out how to deal with these things, how these things are dealt with. So I'm going to take a lot of time on this. And I hope that it will prove to be helpful for all of us. So for the starters, I want to remind us all what I was saying yesterday, that basically you have the help of the Eternal here, up here, and our need down here. And when the major past lives come up, each of them is a kind of encapsulated need. That's what that is. If you remember the teaching on no self, right? There's not a separate kind of ego or soul that endures from lifetime to lifetime. That's why rebirth is different from the teaching of transmigration or reincarnation. There's just this continual remanifesting of these spiritual jangles, and a remanifesting and the building of the merit that's going to help them. And underlying all of it is the reality of the eternal, unchanging, infinite love and wisdom of the unborn, the Buddha nature, the eternal. So when we're talking about this particular past life, we're talking about it as a great example of how part of our master's and karmically inherited need is dealt with. And so it has, like I said, it became a very important example for many of us. She says, a sad and beautiful woman from the early 1900s appears, this period leading up to World War I. She is at the bottom of the line. In other words, she's the most recent. River Master was born in 1924. So of the past lives that River Master knew, as far as I know, this one was the one immediately preceding her, as far as I know. When one speaks in that way, that's a simplification of a very complex process, by the way. I just want to point that out. I won't go into what that means at the moment. She says, her eyes do not show the peace that do the eyes of the others. Here is something with which I must deal. Oh, unhappy woman, you are not me. All that is left of you is with me. Let me know what you have done. Let me understand what causes you to still be so sad. Now, what is not said here is as important as what is being said in some respects. River Master at this point would be feeling that sadness. It's not just, you can get a somewhat wrong impression of a kind of Olympian separation here. But in my experience, when these past, big past lives especially start to come up, you know, you're feeling what that person felt. And since these feelings are very powerful, you know, you're feeling them very powerfully. Also, the kinds of thoughts that were going through the person's mind are the kind of thoughts that are starting to come through, go through your mind. And people at this point can feel like they're going crazy because it can be so powerful. And one of the key grounding factors here is to remember that this is not you. So what Rim Master says here, and I've heard her say it many times in different contexts, you are not me, all that is left of you is with me. The karmic jangle that was left at the time of your death, the unresolved spiritual need, now I have picked up so that that need can find its way to the eternal. When, in 1998, 1999, when I did the kind of year-long retreat, it was shared with Rim Master Mok again in many aspects. One of the most amazing things to me during that time was simply the realization, the insight. I can put it into words, but it came as an insight, a direct insight into the nature of things, that all the need that exists will one day be met. Remember, time means nothing to the eternal. The eternal is eternal. Time means nothing. The coming and going of individual human lives, of whole species, of whole races, of planets, of cosmic systems, of universes, means nothing. And all the karmic need, all the jangles will one day achieve their resolution. And that is proved for you as they are resolved within your own personal life. You're a part of this cosmos, of this universe. And as it's proved in your own experience, you realize this applies everywhere. Without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails. It's the way Rim Master so magnificently stated one of the five laws of the universe. And it is literally true. It's not a vanquishing in the sense of a destroying of the evil. It's the conversion and the resolution of the underlying pain and confusion that makes that jangle what it is, so it can dissolve into the immaculacy of nothingness, dissolve into the infinite love of the eternal. And this, one can be, as I was at times, for a good deal of time in the early half of that year retreat, in a hell of spiritual pain, and yet have this joy in one's heart, realizing that this is being undergone so that this resolution can happen, and that where this is happening with you, it will one day happen with all the need that ever accumulates. It's an amazing realization. And a fundamental part of what is called enlightenment, to know this. There is never cause for despair, no matter how black it gets, no matter how great the suffering of the world is, no matter what we do to ourselves and others and to the world around us, there is never cause for despair in truth. The need that is being created through greed, hate, and delusion and just the sheer plain ignorance that we all suffer from to some degree or other will be met one day. And we'll find its peace and its resolution. Anyway, she starts by saying, you are not me, all that is left of me is with me. So here's how you keep your grounding. Okay, this is coming up. You know, this is not what I really am, this state of feeling, this state of thought. You keep yourself grounded in the meditation, grounded in the eternal, in what you really are as Buddha nature. These are the shadows passing through. And as each chunk of the need comes up to the surface, it has to be felt. And what the person thought has to come up in your thought. just don't take it and run with it. So, what is the first thing that one needs to do in the terms of actual action that one takes at this point? It's actually already been shown us in the preceding chapter, which is on the precepts. The first thing that's needed to the karma that's coming up is the context of the precepts. And that's why the precepts coming immediately before this is so fundamentally important and in no way accidental. Because think about the nature of some of this karma that comes up. Some of it is so pained and confused. And some of the beings, some of them are people, some might not be people, you know, humans. But some of the beings were involved in such horrific action sometimes that you don't want to, it really can't come up safely in the context of no precepts. Because what will happen, it'll just be down the road again. Coming up for conversion and then running off with you. And that can happen. Coming up for conversion and then running off. So there has to be, it has to be contained by the precepts. That's why River Master's statement that River Master Zensho told me once, I never remembered her saying it, but it's such an important point about the kind of order of things in conversion of karma. First you convert it, then, and that's through the applying the precepts, saying no to the delusion, setting limits on how far the delusion can go. Then you can embrace it. So remember, this is coming up in the context of just having taken the precepts to heart at the deepest level. Now it's safe for this anguish need to come up. And what was it confused about? What was the particular person confused about in her lifetime? Well, it's preceptual matters. She says, before me, I see her actions. Oh, she says, let me know what you have done. Let me understand what causes you still to be so sad. So now there comes the memory. It's put in a somewhat, it's put in a way here that worked great for a narration. But I just remind you that you're very likely not experience it so kind of neatly. That what happens is you get whacked with the kind of physical tension. So all this stuff is locked in your body, and so often one of your organs goes ballistic. Your liver starts hurting. Your kidneys start hurting. Your back wants to go out because that's often the effect. The kidneys are right down there along the spine, and your spleen's up the spout. You know. Your lungs are aching, your intestines aren't working. And then it starts releasing the feeling. And so then all of a sudden these waves of inexplicably powerful feeling seemingly out of nowhere come. And then from the feeling, after the feeling then, the memories start to come. There's this chain of stuff being pulled out of you. Chain of experience. So now the memories are coming. Before me, I see her actions and understand the confusion she felt at her death. I recognize within me the impregnations these actions have left and resolve to be aware of and learn from her mistakes. For my skandhas, my body and mind, possess tiny seeds which may be germinated by the karma of former lives. This way this is put shows what a thorough Buddhist River Master was, but he could throw people a bit. What's this germination in these seeds and impregnations and the like? But so let's just kind of go through the language for just a moment. Impregnations doesn't refer, obviously, to any sexual act. It refers to that need that's, as it were, impregnated into your body and mind. Impregnation, placed within or held within. so that it can one day be released into consciousness and to get the help that it needs. Okay? So, my body and mind, my skandhas, body, feeling, thought, volition, and consciousness, those are the skandhas. That's just a way of talking about what we call body and mind. It's a particularly accurate, concise, and wonderful way, by the way. But for now, we'll just say body and mind. My body and mind possess tiny seeds which may be germinated by the karma of former lives. In other words, I possess within myself, just by virtue of my being a human being, the potential to reactivate the old karma. You know, I too have a will. I too have thoughts. I too have feelings. So when this karma starts to come up, I could go, whoopee, let's go with it. Or this is too powerful, I can't stand against it. I can't stand up to it and be swept away. We had this happen with someone here, and I've seen it happen with people at the Abbey many years ago. It's, you know, this is why I said, you know, the precepts and our resolve to follow the precepts, and more than our resolve, our praying to the Eternal to help us to follow the precepts at these times is so important. You need more than your own resolve. When you have reached the point where you can't stand it anymore, you think, turn it to the Eternal and cry for help, and there will be the help to endure. There's this lovely verse in the New Testament that I learned when I was a kid by Paul, and some people think Paul was have a grouch against Paul, but Paul got some things right, let me tell you, and this is one of them. He said, there has no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful and will not suffer you to be tempted above your ability to handle it, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape so that you may be able to bear it. And that, man, that's true. It's not exactly escape, but that you will be able to handle it. Just remember to turn towards the Eternal and cry for help. And don't think that you either can't do it or that you have to do it all on your own without help. The Eternal will show you the way. She says, my body and mind possess tiny seeds which may be germinated by the karma of former lives. If I don't hold fast to the precepts, if I don't hold fast to the Lord of the house. That's not in there, but that's what's meant. She says, when I purify this karma, these seeds cannot germinate. Well, this is put in a way that's that is a little bit in the expression of it. It's not what's meant, but in the expression of it, a little bit driver-y. So I'm going to restate this sentence because it's a really important point. When with the Eternal's help this karma is purified, then as long as I keep my training up from this point, these seeds will not germinate. And River Master herself says that other places in Lotus Blossom. But I just remind you that, as she said many times since 76, many times she said it, always your past karma can at least potentially act upon you. Don't ever think you've just got rid of something completely. We always need the right level of vigilance. And I say the right level because we're not talking about paranoia and self-doubt here. At any minute I'm going to fall off the wagon and become an axe murderer because someone in my past life was. We don't need to be paranoid. As long as we're truly meditating, we're training to the best of our ability to meditate, to follow the precepts, to walk in the way of the Buddhas and ancestors, we are training in the context of basic spiritual safety. And we're only unsafe when we start to wander from that path. There is security in the three refuges, in the true sense of what security is. And there is always a risk. And it keeps us on our toes and it keeps reminding us, don't get swollen headed. Always remember to go and bow. Always remember to ask for help. Always remember to offer everything. Not my will, but thine. Always remember. She says, this woman was religious and when dying in a foreign country longed to hear the absolution of her sins in the words of her old church, but no priest could be found. To bring her peace, I have the absolution recited for her, but some confusion over past acts still remains, for Christian doctrine does not well understand the law of karma. I remember when her master had this done, she had, I don't know whether she had one, she actually owned one, or she had to get one, but she actually got the Russian Orthodox liturgy. So this woman was Russian Orthodox, and she got it read to this to her as if she was this woman. And this is part of man helping God do the work. This it's the Eternal lays out for you what's needed, and then the means comes to hand. And this happens again and again, and I can only describe it as miraculous the way it works. And I've had many examples of this in my own experience. I'm going to just give you one here, which is one of the simpler ones to actually talk about. Just to show you this is not unique in any way, what's being described here. One of the past lives that I had a kind of a flash memory of many years ago. It might be as much as 25 to 30 years ago now, when I was much younger, was of a man in trenches in World War I who died in some way, and I wasn't sure how he died. But I always had a thought that he got hit by an artillery shell, killed by an artillery shell, but I wasn't sure. Well, in a kind of not too clear way, it came up again in 98-99. But mostly what seemed to have come up at that time was just the kind of this longing he had. He had died in the trenches longing to just be back in the, he was English, back in the countryside along the Thames where he was raised, I guess. Where he had some, I think is where he was raised, but certainly where he had his fondest memories. So about a year, about I think it was like in 2000, on one of my visits over to Britain, I was actually able to get some time and go to Oxford and actually just do what he longed to do, just be there a bit. And eventually found my way to the War Memorial Garden that's right in the center of town near the cathedral. And I just stood at that War Memorial Garden and I just kind of worshipped. I don't know how else to put it. I just kind of worshipped. And I ended up just sitting there and doing a sketch from which I did some paintings later, which I have one of them hanging in my office. It's no great work of art, but it will always have a meaning for me because of, there's a complex thing that's happening there. It's a love. I'm a human being, and that man died at the hand of human beings, an incredible mess of human hatred and folly. And so part of what he needed was to know the love of man in a certain way. So just to be able to stand at that War Memorial Garden and just worship in that way and love in that way was helpful, very helpful. And just to walk along the Thames as he had done was helpful. And it helped lay to rest the grief of which he had died. these actions that we're talking about, they're within the context of the precepts. So if it is good to do them, then one can do them when there is the opportunity. If the kind of things that the person longed for at the time of death are non-preceptual, then in some way you have to say no to that while finding the way with the Eternal's guidance to giving that which is really needed but has become twisted and become non-preceptual. And that's more difficult, actually. More complex, let's say, more convoluted. And in good time, there's always the way shown. If there is something that man needs to do, if only, and often it is really just enough just to forgive. Just to forgive. Along these lines, well, I can tell another story, of course, that from my own experience. And this one was not one so easily dealt with, because wherever there is a perpetration, there is a greater self-judgment at the time of death. And this was I mentioned this before, a young man who raped a woman and then jumped off a cliff, killed himself, and whose karma I inherited. And that this was the first past life that ever came up for me. It came up in the fall of 76. And it all came in a rush, and just a kind of howl of pain came out of me. It was quite a howl. And also this rush of compassion, and the rush of the water of the Spirit, this compassion and this compassion and this pain all come out at once, so that what I was given at that time, and that was the first round on this particular one, what I was given was I experienced his horror at what he'd done, and his sheer horror at what he'd done, and that's what came out in that scream. And then I experienced immediately and with it, the compassion for him. Because remember that from the Eternal's view, there is nothing that is not loved. The Eternal does not see wickedness. The Eternal only loves and never judges. It's just there is karmic consequence. So I had to go through the round again on this one in 98. And this is over 20 years later. And this time I actually experienced the full karmic consequence of what was, I hope it's a full, I don't know how much more there might be, but another round of it. And this time it was his suicide, and it's the only time in my life I've actually felt suicidal when that was coming up. The extremity of the self-judgment, and the extremity of the pain is so great that it's the only time suicide ever appealed to me. It went on for a couple days. I had to really hold fast at that time. So there's a lesson there. Don't go raping and murdering people, and don't go killing yourself. There's a perceptual lesson there. Anyway, where there was the judgment of man or the fear of the judgment of man, the forgiveness and compassion of man is needed. And the Eternal will help us do that. You notice I never leave the Eternal out of the picture. That's so really important. If you leave the Eternal out of the picture, you will come up against one day against something that you simply believe you can't accept. But if the Eternal's not left out of the picture, the Eternal will help you. If you don't willfully block the Eternal out, then that which you believe you cannot accept, you will accept, because the Eternal will carry you on wings of compassion. That's my experience. Anyway, Rim Master, now this is Rim Master, this is I'm just going to read this through, but this, many of us have used this, just read this directly to a chunk of karma one time or another, this teaching. So she says, remember she says, confusion over past acts still remains, for Christian doctrine does not well understand the law of karma. So now she's going to give the teaching that helps make up for this lack. She says, I will do what I can to ease your mind. I embrace you. You must forgive all those who wronged or harmed you, and you must take refuge in the Buddha, refuge in the Dharma, refuge in the Sangha. Because of your ignorance of the Four Noble Truths of the Lord of the House, the existence of suffering, suffering's cause, the cessation of suffering, and the Noble Eightfold Path, you performed acts which had horrible results. If you had known these truths, you would have understood the law of karma, which teaches that every cause has an effect, and you would not have committed these acts. Because of your ignorance and confusion concerning this at the time of your death, what had been your karma caused me to come into existence. One of the purposes of my life until now has been the conversion of your ignorance. Now that this conversion has been accomplished, the root of your karma has been cut, and the time of repayment is over. This conversion is acknowledged by the Lord of the House and witnessed by this pure-hearted congregation. By the guidance of the Buddhas and ancestors, you have discarded and purified all your karma of body, mouth, and will and obtained great immaculacy. This is by the power of conversion. The purpose of my life in the future is the good of all beings. I do not turn away from you. Let us, together with all beings, take refuge in the Buddha, refuge in the Dharma, refuge in the Sangha. You should know that only volition is the doer of karma, and only feeling is a reaper of karma, in the ultimate sense. Yes. No doer is there who does the deed, nor is there one who feels the fruit. What is this? A lot of this is taken just right out of the ordination ceremony. This is an ordination. What is meant by an ordination? It's a reorientation at the deepest level of which someone is capable at the time. A reorientation away from the ways that don't work onto what does work. So that is why the very heart of the ordination process when someone is ordained is the taking of a master who represents the eternal, whose job it is to point to the eternal. And it is the taking of the precepts, which is the guidelines for how to stay locked on to the eternal, how to hold fast to the eternal, and how to say no to worldliness and delusion that if we indulged it, would create the illusion of separation from the eternal. And that is what's happening here. It's put in different words, but it's a kind of ordination for a karmic jangle. And there, with that goes the joy and certainty that goes at any ordination. You could say, well, what are you really ordaining there? There's no person there anymore. Exactly. But what are you ordaining when you actually ordain a human being? There's no self there. There is no separate self. Therefore, you can ordain what you need to ordain and don't worry about the theories. Give the precepts to that which needs the precepts. Give the teaching to that which needs the teaching. How the precepts are given here in an abbreviated form and as the refuges. But the refuges include all the precepts. All the precepts telescope into the refuges. This is a wonderfully creative and right use of ceremonial. It's what you're supposed to do when you really learn what ceremonial is. We're not trying to become little kind of perfect little altar polishing automatons. The purpose of ceremonial is to help us do the essential spiritual work in the finest way we can, with the finest spiritual attitude, the deepest attitude we can. And her master was a master of this. I'm going to leave it at this for today. This is a long talk. There's still some more to come. So Buddha, Dharma, the Sangha.